Could convicted wife killer Scott Peterson walk free from prison? An LA-based legal group is now taking on the notorious killer's case, alleging there is new evidence that supports Peterson's claim of innocence.
A new effort is underway in California to clear Scott Peterson.
Lacey Peterson went missing on Christmas Eve in 2002. Scott Peterson was having an affair with massage therapist Amber Fry, who says she didn't know that he was married. A jury convicted Peterson in the murder of his wife and unborn son, Connor, in one of the most famous court cases of the century. Now the Los Angeles Innocence Project wants new DNA testing of this burned-out orange van with a bloodstained mattress found inside. The van was found near the Petersons' Modesto home at the time of Lacey's disappearance. The Innocence Project also cites updated witness statements about a burglary across the street from Peterson's home. Peterson's legal team credits former investigative producer Mike Gudgel with tracking down new evidence.
I looked into the van way back in 2003, and then I found a witness who saw the van near where one of the witnesses saw Lacey that morning. So there were connections between the van and the burglary across the street.
Attorneys for Peterson have argued his wife was killed after she stumbled upon a burglary. Mike Belmessieri was a juror who served on the Peterson trial.
I don't want to see a man who may be innocent remain in prison.
But journalists who covered the case say don't overlook the mountain of evidence that points to Peterson's guilt.
The fact that the body was found exactly where he said he was fishing, 90 miles away from his home, that his girlfriend had him on tape admitting that he had said his wife was gone before she died.
I spoke to Court TV's Ted Rowlands.
This is not simply a claim of not guilty. It's a claim of actual innocence.
And that's a huge distinction. They're not saying something went wrong at trial, Scott Peterson. No, they're saying he is innocent.
Okay, so we've got our little snacky snack in. We've got our lips on. We have our waters. It's time to finish Poop Bird Scott Peterson.
Real quick, at work on our HR board, literally, because at least two are because of me, lipstick, hydration, and protein. And you just named all three.
That's on your board?
It's our team HR board.
Very important.
With other, you know,
yeah,
HR
those are the
related.
Most important things. Okay, so we are on part two. Got Sista here, Elena, Mom, of course. I'm Sherry. This is Outline of a Murder. We're going to just continue on because we're batch recording. We ended with the five drives to the marina and...
In different vehicles.
In different vehicles, yeah.
Rentals.
Which we think he was looking for the bodies.
Yep.
Yeah, because he was only there for a few minutes.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And during the same time frame, Peterson starts making a lot of changes to his work and living conditions or situations. So on January 13th, he gave 30 days notice that he was terminating his warehouse lease. It wasn't up until October. That same month, he started discussions to sell the home. On January 29th, he sold Lacey's car, trading it in for a Dodge Dakota pickup truck. On January 30th, he stopped home mail delivery and directed that all his mail be delivered to the post office box that he had set up on December 23rd for Amber to mail things.
So January 29th, he sells her car.
Yeah.
She goes missing December 24th.
Yep. And then the nursery for Connor was converted into storage space. On February 18th, satellite television service in the Petersons' home was canceled. The satellite company's records indicated that the customer had explained he was moving overseas. So
yeah,
everybody's like,
gonna
he
run.
Wasn't fleeing. He wasn't fleeing. Nah, this is fleeing behavior. This is preparation, especially your satellite. Like I could see... Not this soon, but I could see selling the house because it'd be difficult to live there without your family. Right.
That's only a month.
But not even, you know, 2 months later. No. I could see selling your wife's car, but probably years later or at least months.
Yeah.
I
they
could
don't
see
know.
All that. But satellite? Nope. If you're going to live here, people are going to have their TV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he was selling the house, so you would get rid of
it. It wasn't
other stuff.
Sold yet.
Yeah, they hadn't even found the wife yet.
Yeah, most people, they will have their TV. That's the thing. They will sell other stuff, but they're going to have their TV. So that's very interesting to me. I think he was planning to leave within days. Now, a $500,000 reward was posted by a private foundation for information leading to her return. And for months, nothing. I mean, it was just crickets. They had nothing about where she was.
Let's go back to the satellite situation.
Okay.
If you were going to flee, why would you care if your satellite was still on?
Because you're going to get charged for it. Maybe he didn't want his parents to have to deal with it.
Okay.
Okay. They had some promising sightings. Peterson, no interest. They collected an authorized wiretap of his phone that showed he took days to follow up with police about a possible sighting in Washington. So days. They get a sighting report. It takes him days to call the police to find out about the sighting. Then he told others, including his mother, that he had followed up with police immediately. Peterson similarly told a business associate he was waiting near the airport in case he needed to fly up to Washington, though at the time he was not anywhere near an airport. In mid-April, a significant storm hit the San Francisco Bay Area. On April 13th, after the storm had passed, a couple walking their dog came upon Connor's badly decomposed body, apparently washed ashore with the other storm debris. The location was just over a mile from the southern tip of Brooks Island. The next morning, Lacey's body was discovered on the shoreline at Point Isabel, south of Connor's body, and again just over a mile from Brooks Island. Lacey's body had barnacles and duct tape on it. From residual clumps of fabric, it was possible to determine that she had been wearing light-colored capris. The clothing was consistent with the recollection of Amy, who testified that Lacey was wearing cream-colored pants when she last saw her sister on December 23rd. And there's a huge controversy over the pants, okay? Because some say, no, she was wearing black pants the last she was seen. No, she was wearing white.
Black pants with a white top, I think, well, is what the
Okay, so there's not any gruesome. I did see the bodies of her and Connor, and that was disturbing. But as far as her, okay, so this was a shirt that was found on her body.
Oh, it's dressy.
Yeah. And then this right here is where they find Connor. The water's a little bit higher than normal. But he was here with the debris. And then this is a picture of them loading her up into the coroner's van. I thought I had another picture, though.
I really wish they would have, like, used a crony or supported her a little bit better.
Yeah, I thought I had a different, like, you can look up the different pictures of where her body was located and Connor's was located to see the proximity. And then, of course, to the island as well, where they figured that he was close to when he dumped their bodies out of the boat.
You have pictures of her and him and Connor?
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't look at those.
I wouldn't recommend anybody look at them. So the clothing was consistent with, again, what Amy last saw her sister wearing.
Hold on. So sorry. So the top that you showed. So, guys, I really recommend that y'all see this because that is a dressy, sweet little top. It's not something that you're just going to throw on in the morning just to run some errands.
That's a good point. And if that's what she was wearing, so she said from the residual clumps of fabric, it was possible to determine that she'd been wearing light-colored capris. I would be curious if the sister remembers her wearing this shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Or did she get up that morning to prepare for the evening dinner? You know what I mean? And she was going to wear something cute like that. And had no plans to do really much of anything, just maybe, you know, rest a little bit, hang out around the house. I think it would be weird to get dressed up that dressy before the dinner.
I certainly don't.
Unless they were going to run errands, like to pick up the basket and all of that before they headed over. I don't know how far the parents were. It couldn't have been long for them to show up at the same time the police showed up, so they were probably maybe close by. But that definitely looks dressy.
And here's another thing. They had invited the sister and boyfriend to go to dinner the night before. So what was the plan? Like, what venue? Or did they go somewhere a little bit nice? Because that's a nice...
Or maybe they were going to have dinner at the parents? Or the 23rd. Did it say they were all going to go out together, like at a restaurant versus having a dinner in a home?
Well, I thought you had said the 23rd when they went to see her sister at the salon.
They invited her to the dinner or just dinner? I don't know. That's a good question. Because that's making me wonder. It's like, were they going to meet at a restaurant, or was this more of a home meal? Let me see.
And the only reason we're visiting about this is because it would kind of identify a little bit more when she went missing, when she was killed, in my mind.
I thought they said they're going to dinner.
That's what I thought.
Not at a person's house. They're going to the mother's
say,
house the night before.
It just says that they invited Amy and her boyfriend to go to dinner, but she declined. And that night, Lacey and her mother, Sharon, spoke on the phone and confirmed that Lacey and Peterson would join Sharon and Gransky for dinner the following night on Christmas Eve.
I would think a restaurant, though, is going to dinner. If they're coming to the house, coming to dinner.
Yeah, Christmas so Eve, I'm thinking going. They're going to a house.
Oh, for sure Christmas Eve. But this I'm is still 23rd. Thinking a 23rd, yeah.
But the dinner was going to be Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was dinner, but it makes it sound like they had invited just those two to dinner that evening to go out on the 23rd.
Mm. Yeah, on the 23rd. I hope that because of the duct tape, he didn't, because I think he's guilty, throw her in alive. I hope not.
Okay, yeah, I don't think she was alive by the time he got her to the water, actually. I think he killed her that night. Okay. Let me get back to where I was. Okay, here we go. So they find their bodies. She's wearing, obviously, this cute little outfit. But Peterson told the police that Lacey was wearing black pants when he saw her on December 24th. So he's saying she was wearing black pants. The sister's saying she was wearing capris. We know the clump of fabric was light-colored capris that were found with her body. So she was not wearing black pants because they didn't find black pants material. They found the light-colored capris from the day before.
Interesting, because I would have paired that with black.
I would have paired it actually with the light-colored because it has like the dots and stuff, like the lighter dots. So I like contrast.
Well, and I like dark and black, so... Yeah, that would have given me an opportunity to wear black.
But the fact that, you know, he's saying she was wearing black pants and they don't find black pants with her. That's not what they find. They find the light-colored capri fragments with her. So he's lying. He's lying through his teeth because he's trying to say she's wearing something different.
He can't help himself.
So that bothered me because it's an outright lie. And then DNA testing confirmed the identities of both Lacey and Connor. And then a Brian Peterson, no relation, performed the autopsies.
Wow.
Lacey's body had several parts missing, including her head, forearms, and one lower leg. And again, it's not gruesome. It's just a diagram of where the anchors probably were. And so when you anchor a body... The changes to the tissue in the water cause it to begin to break down. The marine animals, the tides in and out, basically means that her body started coming apart more than likely where the anchors were.
How many anchors?
He had made six, but only took five.
Okay.
And there's five places right there on the... And these are on the website, aren't they, these pictures?
Yeah, so if you look at the one lower leg, right? So she's got several parts missing, but one lower leg is missing. So I'm assuming it's the one where he put the anchor at the knee versus another one was at the foot. So I don't know if she had her foot, but yeah, she was in pieces.
So weird.
Never found her head, by the way. Now, another controversy is over Connor. Lacey's uterus was still enlarged. Her birth canal was closed. So it is impossible, guys, for her to have had her baby. See, a lot of people, they try to say that she was held against her will for however long, and that she had the baby.
Yeah.
She did not have that baby. And not only that, there was no evidence that she had a C-section either. No one cut the baby out. So that's just fact. I don't know why people keep going off on that. So what it means is that she died while she was still pregnant. She had been in the water for 3 to 6 months, and it's not possible to determine the cause of death. The lack of blood in the house, I think he strangled her, but that's just my opinion. Connor's body was intact. Now, here's where people get tripped up as well. There was tape on his neck, but there was no associated injuries, which led Dr. Peterson to conclude that the tape was debris that had attached to Connor along with the other trash. So remember, there was a storm, and they think it just came in because there wasn't like any wounding. He didn't have any wounds. He didn't have anything like that. His body was pretty much pristine.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it wasn't that he was smothered or anything like that.
Do you get to, in the documents, does it get to theories of how he killed her?
I don't think so, because I don't think they know how he...
Here's the thing. When you said pliers with her hair, why?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a real good
question.
The only
thing I could think of is stab her. Like, well, there should be no reason.
If the pliers were in the boat, maybe strangulation, but I don't think she was strangled in the boat. I think she was already dead.
Yeah, but I'm just, unless he attached
something to her and her hair.
With that.
Yeah, maybe to just twist it. Yeah. Or she's in the boat with the pliers and her hair, you know, gets caught in there because they are really rough. But it does make it sound like they were, you know, like somehow grabbed her hair and while they were closed.
Yeah. Okay.
There was no clothing on Connor. He still had part of his umbilical cord and then meconium in his intestines, which means that he died before birth. And then based on his size and the softness of his tissue, Dr. Peterson said that Connor must have remained protected inside of her for some time after death, and that he spent a significant period of time exposed to the water, or he couldn't have because he would have been eaten by marine animals. And we know that because of his size, he would have been destroyed, and like Lacey was. So she had had her prenatal checkup on December 23rd. Based on ultrasounds, Connor was at 32 to 33 weeks of gestation. Postmortem measurements of his bone growth allowed a Dr. DeVore to estimate his death as between December 21st and December 23rd, with an average on December 21st and December 24th, with an average of December 23rd. In other words, he probably died the day of the ultrasound because he didn't grow at all between that and then
How did he figure that out? But the growth, yep. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's why I think he killed her that night. I really do.
But wouldn't he be seen on cameras? Or, of course, this was in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe not.
Then a hydrologist, Dr. Ralph Chang, with the United States Geological Survey, he was contacted by the police while Lacey was missing. And then again in May, when the bodies had been found, he was asked to assume that Lacey's body had been dumped with weights into the San Francisco Bay, and based on that assumption, to estimate where the body might be found. The second time, after the bodies had been found, he was asked to estimate where they might have originated. You know, so he's going to look at tidal, you know, activity, currents, all of that. And he said he was able to estimate a location for Connor near the southern tip of Brooks Island, but he could not think of where Lacey would have been. So he didn't know that's where they found her, or found Connor, until later. So he nailed that one. So on April 12th, this was a day before Connor's body was found, Peterson bought a car using his mother's name, Jacqueline, as his own, providing a fake driver's license number and paying $3,600 in cash. He'd grown a goatee and mustache and appeared to have dyed his hair. On April 15th, when Sharon called him about the discovery of the as yet unidentified bodies of Connor and Lacey, Peterson didn't return her call. Believing he may flee, the police arrested him on April 18th, and when arrested, he had $15,000 in cash, foreign currency, two driver's licenses, his own and his brother's, a family member's credit card, camping gear, considerable extra clothing, and multiple cell phones. So I have a picture of that.
I think he had his hair blonde, too, a bright blonde.
Orangey.
Yeah, which like,
which now, to I be do remember noticeable. The documentary, there seemed to be reasonable explanations for some of the things. I don't remember details.
Well, I mean, I guess there could be, but when you take the whole of everything, that's where it's kind of like, again, it's the body of evidence. So it's not just, well, these things could be explained, but these can't. And it's also got to be taken into the context of his behavior. Why are you dyeing your hair? Well, the media's been hounding me. They've been hounding you since December. Why do you decide when the bodies are found that you're going to dye your hair?
And foreign money,
yeah.
Passport.
Well,
why you have $15,000 in your car? I mean,
and why are you buying a new car? Because he just bought a Dodge. Why are you buying a $3,600 mm-hmm. used car? So
I think there's reasonable doubt in those things, in some of them.
I don't, well, if you take it as a whole.
Yeah.
I can't piecemeal and say, well, there'd be a reason he'd have these things.
But not foreign money.
There was. So here's, think of it like this, reasonable doubt, right? So you're taking it as a whole and you've made a decision. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, reasonable doubt, if you can't, if I were to take it as a whole, see how I can explain this. So if I were to take it as a whole, reasonable doubt, convinced that he did it. Like, I think that the reasonable doubt piece, you can't take it as a whole. Because what you're doing is you're taking it as a whole in order to form a guilty opinion.
Well, the legal definition of reasonable doubt is the whole body of evidence. So a lot of people think that one or two pieces of evidence can be enough for reasonable doubt, but that's not the legal definition. So the prosecutors made it really plain, and hopefully I don't do them injustice in trying to summarize what they said, but there's an actual legal term called body of evidence. And so when a prosecutor is going to go after somebody, a lot of times you'll hear them say there's not enough evidence. That's it's a legality. So you have to have enough pieces to form a body of evidence. So there's specific standards or specific pieces of evidence that are considered, okay, we have a body. We've got a body of evidence that is pointing to the potential guilt of this person. So you can't just show up with like a few little things and expect to get an indictment, right? So then they present the body of evidence to the grand jury, and the grand jury is like, yes, there's enough to pursue this. They do their arrest warrant. Then the prosecutors have to present their case. A lot of them love the circumstantial because it's the circumstantial that makes the body of evidence. So you have to take it as a whole. So reasonable doubt is not one or two pieces that might make the person seem that they could have maybe not been the killer. It's there's not enough evidence.
Okay. So think of it like this. Let's say there were 10 items. Okay. Five. Okay. You can't explain those away, but the other five you can. And so in my mind, you take those five to explain the other five. All of them to you point to guilt. Well, think of it in my direction. These five can't be explained and to me wouldn't prove his guilt. So there's that reasonable doubt.
But you're not just taking in the car things. You're taking in everything. So that's why I was saying it's all of the evidence. So the lying, the cars. So if you're in the jury room, it's not just the car items. They're taking in the lying. They're taking in the visits to the marina. They're taking in all of these things as a whole body. So it's not just the car stuff.
Even if some are explained, though, at least five, maybe more. She just died. They found her. Is fleeing behavior.
That's considered evidence. So, for sure.
I was using that as an example to split it in half. Mm-hmm. But all the evidence as a whole, because like I've been doing, playing devil's advocate, the only one I could not do was going to the marina five times. Mm-hmm. That would definitely lean me the other way. So this was my example.
Oh, okay. I thought that was very interesting when they explained the reasonable doubt, because basically it's that the prosecution has not presented the evidence that is saying he did it, you know. So there's a reasonable doubt that the defense can say, well, you know, it was an intruder. We have evidence there was an intruder. So then they present their stuff, like the maybe a hair fiber, maybe blah, blah. So then the prosecution has the right to say, well, we know that means nothing because of this, this, and this. And
vice versa.
And I had no idea. I thought, and one of the things the prosecutor said that was really interesting, he said people in true crime get caught up on the things you can't explain. He said, but in a trial, that's not the case. You're looking at the full body. And so you have to use a lot of common sense. Would a person dye their hair, grab $15,000, buy a new car, have foreign currency for no reason? No, they're not going to do that. They're obviously going to go somewhere.
And buy a car in his mother's name.
And then
name.
You have the two IDs. And then, you know, now he tried to say that he was given the money for some other purpose. Okay, but why did you dye your hair? Well, it was the media. Well, why do you have foreign currency? Why do you have your brother's license?
I do remember your passport? That one. I'm almost positive. There was a reasonable explanation. Yeah, but
well,
I get it.
It is reasonable to him. When I heard it, I thought it was crap.
Well, and his family, but yeah.
Well, and see, that's where it gets a little bit tricky, because I wouldn't believe his family. But there are cases where the family's like, the dude was with us.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way he could have done this murder. And I'm like, why are you not listening to the family? So I have heard of that.
His family is very unemotional too, just like him.
He was the baby too. He was spoiled rotten.
Okey-doke.
That was just an interesting explanation of reasonable doubt that I'd never heard.
Yeah.
And because I thought if there's any evidence that points to innocence, that's reasonable doubt. And they're like, no, that is not reasonable doubt. And they get these instructions. I've never, you know, served in a criminal thing. Mm-hmm. So I've never been explained the legal definition of reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting
deal.
I'll
have to agreed. Look up his reasons. Why he had all this, what he said.
It's out there.
Yeah, yeah. He said he had reasons for it. Now, the Petersons' expenses were high in relation to their current income. TradeCorp USA had never been profitable. It had losses of $40,000 to $200,000 in consecutive years. Mm-hmm. The company was not meeting its sales goals, and it owned its parent company $190,000. Mm-hmm. Peterson had signed multiple credit card applications in the company's name, including misrepresentations as to the company's income. So here's where I think that the motive actually was.
Yeah.
In fall of 2002, Lacey inherited jewelry and at Peterson's request had some of the items appraised. They were valued at more than $100,000. Computers seized from the Peterson home and the warehouse showed emails sent from an account bearing the username SLPete1 discussing the sale of jewelry, and eBay records likewise showed Peterson had posted jewelry items for sale. Lacey also stood to inherit one-third of the proceeds from the sale of her grandfather's house, an interest estimated to be worth around $140,000. Lacey's interest would terminate on her death with no right of survivorship to Peterson, but it was unclear if he knew that, meaning the money would not have gone to him, but did he know? Brent, the co-trustee of the grandparents' estate, had not told Peterson about that provision. Mm. So it would have stayed in the family. I think he killed her for the money and the debt, yeah, as well as he wanted to be free.
Yeah. And he specifically stated to the police right off the bat that she had jewelry stolen.
Yeah. Good one. So you're going to say there's jewelry stolen that he's trying to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did he sell it? I wonder if he sold any.
They never said. They never said. He might have. I don't think it's here in these records.
Only because that was one of the first things that he said, so it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Or he had it hidden and had the intentions to continue to try to sell it. But you're right. He mentions the jewelry out of everything else. See? Smart. Smart. I did not connect that. Now, the fishing boat. This was another thing. So the two things that made up my mind was the financial and the going back to the location to see where the bodies were. Yeah. This didn't help either. Someone had conducted searches of classified advertisements for boats on December 7th.
Mm-hmm.
This was the day after Peterson learned he would no longer be able to conceal his marriage from Fry. Now, this could point to he had started formulating his plan. If that's the case, when they talked to the sister on the 23rd, he was trying to keep things normal, or maybe he had not yet decided. But the day after, the ultimatum is, you tell Amber by the 9th, or I will, he is looking for a boat.
I thought his father-in-law bought him that boat.
Mm-mm.
He bought it?
Mm-hmm. Peterson inspected the boat the next day,
okay,
and bought it on December 9th without the anchors that came with the boat, hence why he had to make them. Peterson never registered the boat, nor did he ever mention the purchase to his father, to Gransky, an avid fisherman who had invited Peterson to fish several times. He never mentioned it to the Rocha family or to his friend Gregory Reed, with whom he frequently discussed fishing.
Okay, so the father-in-law is why I remember that, because he was very upset.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, not really the father-in-law, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
He also, a review of the computer's browser histories showed searches on December 8th for boat ramps on the Pacific Ocean, then examining nautical charts, currents, and maps for the Berkeley Marina in San Francisco Bay, including the area around Brooks Island. So he's bought a boat. He's now searching for locations. So then if we go back to the 23rd, he had already decided he was going to kill her. So he had enough smarts to act normal.
He should have planned better.
So with that, that doesn't, to me, point that he was buying it for that.
Well, he didn't register.
He'd never gone fishing with his own boat.
He's a very selfish, stupid individual.
But he wouldn't tell anybody? I mean, he's a braggart. I would think that he would say, hey, I got this boat.
And like, didn't take the anchors.
Yeah.
Which, that doesn't mean anything, though, to me.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah, because if he had planned to kill her, take her out on the boat, why wouldn't he take the free anchors?
Because he's not a fisherman.
Wait. Well, obviously, he had thought about it at some point because he made them.
Yeah, but he can't go back. So he's not a fisherman. He's never bought a boat. I don't even know if he's ever gone fishing in a boat. I have no idea. So far, all I know is he's talked about doing it with his, her mother's boyfriend, and then his friend have talked about fishing. So he probably wouldn't think, I need the anchors. So he's not going to go back and get the anchors, because that's going to look suspicious when his wife is missing.
No, when I'm about the anchors, to me, why it doesn't matter if he took them or not. He bought the boat. Y'all feel that it was to dispose of her.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if he had already formulated that plan, then he would know that he would need anchors to keep her down.
Well, what I'm saying is he might have thought they were already in there.
Oh, you didn't realize that they didn't come with the boat.
Yeah. And then to go back would raise suspicion.
Agreed.
If he was an avid fisherman, I could see him buying a boat. He wasn't. He was a golfer. So if he went and bought golf clubs and one of them was used to kill her, I could actually have more reasonable doubt on that than I could on the fact that out of the blue, in the middle of winter, he's buying a boat. It just doesn't make any sense. And he's not telling a single person.
And I'm going to have to look this up because I remember significant issue about the boat and the father-in-law. And I'm wondering if he tried to say that he was buying it as a gift, a Christmas gift for the father-in-law.
Maybe. But again, it's the whole of the evidence. So they've got financial records. They have fleeing appearances. They have the fact that he's trying to sell her jewelry. I mean, when you take it and you get this boat, you have the affair. He's lied several times. He's gone back to where he dumped their bodies. There's just no way the dude's innocent. There's just no way. No way.
No, the financial records and the visits to the harbor for sure.
And on top of that, you're in that much financial trouble and you buy a boat. Now, he is selfish. I could see him 100% doing it. But at the same time, it's like you're in this financial issue and you go buy a boat.
Okay, here's another thought.
Okay.
If he did not intend to fish, then why did he buy lures?
Well, as a cover.
Yeah. He didn't.
Because he's a moron. Them. He's just murdered his pregnant wife. And I bet you when the cops said, what lures did you use? Remember he went blank? I bet he realized in that moment, I didn't even open them.
Okay.
Okay, so he, you know, does he searches all that. December 24th, the day that Peterson said he was fishing, was gray, damp, and cold with a bit of a wind. Few people were there. Peterson wouldn't say what he was hoping to catch or, you know, any of that. Angelo Kunang, a published author on fishing in the San Francisco Bay, was accepted by the court as an expert fisherman, and he testified that Brooks Island was the wrong place to seek sturgeon, because that was one of the fishes he eventually said and he had searched on. They congregated in a different part of the bay that time of year. He also preferred live baits to lures. Plus, Peterson's rod was too weak to catch them. Now, and the boat was inadequate and all that. That doesn't bother me as much because Peterson wasn't an experienced fisherman. Right. So it's something to go, that's interesting, but I wouldn't be able to take that as evidence of guilt, even as a whole, because the guy obviously doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
Right.
Also, though, on top of that, it was illegal to troll for sturgeon, which, again, that's just not much, you know.
So after he bought the boat, he researched tides. What else?
He researched the tide. Hang on one second.
That actually impressed me.
Might be the only smart thing he did.
Yeah, it was unusual.
Okay.
To see where the body would go.
He searched for boat ramps, nautical charts, currents, and maps. And he went to several fishing-related websites.
Okay.
So the prosecution's theory is this, that Peterson killed Lacey sometime on the night of December 23rd or the morning of December 24th. On the morning of the 24th, Peterson let their dog Mackenzie out with his leash on to make it appear something had happened to Lacey or happened while Lacey was walking him. He wrapped Lacey's body in a tarp in the bed of his truck, covered her with patio umbrellas, drove to the warehouse, and then removed her body into the boat. He then drove to the Berkeley Marina, motored out to the area near Brooks Island, and slipped her body attached to homemade concrete weights like the homemade anchor Peterson had made into the bay. Peterson then returned to Modesto, dropped off the boat at the warehouse, put the boat cover out back under a leaky gas blower so that any scent would be obscured, washed his clothes, and proceeded with the ruse that Lacey was missing, hoping her body would never be discovered. So the defense presented, and this is another controversial thing, the burglaries that were going on in the neighborhood and sighting of a woman that looked like Lacey walking a dog.
Right.
So they said that it occurred on Peterson Street the week of her disappearance and argued that the police felt adequately to follow up on whether a burglary had any connection to Lacey's disappearance. It also presented evidence that a stranger had gone to several houses on December 23rd asking for money, and one neighbor thought casing houses for burglaries, so might have had something to do with her disappearance.
But didn't one of the robbers either get arrested or come forward?
They got
and
both
say
of them.
It wasn't.
They got both of the robbers, and they said, "We did not murder her,"
right.
Which, you know, they're criminals, so that doesn't mean much to me. But the date of the burglary is what's in question, because the news media are like, "There's no way. We were there."
Right.
Bull crap. I could 100% see people rob houses because they're distracted with Peterson, and then they're like, "Dude, we need drugs. Who cares?"
Right.
I mean, to me, actually, I would probably have picked robbing that house with them down the street in front of Peterson's house, because everybody's going to be captured by that. It could be high risk, but I actually thought, yeah, I don't think that would have fazed me.
One thing I remember from the documentary, there was actually a very, I think he was well-respected journalist. Don't remember if his local or national or what. He was set up, like you could see that house, and he had presented some evidence with the video because it was videoed.
That's not in any of the court documents that he captured the burglars going in or out of the house.
I'm just saying, like, it was either he confirmed it or confirmed that it didn't happen because of his video.
I would love that piece of evidence.
Yeah.
Because that would be interesting, because everybody is saying there's no way, and that it was on a totally different day anyway. I don't think the burglars had anything to do with it. The defense also challenged the prosecution's theory that Connor died on the 23rd or 24th. They admitted their own evidence that it was he lived until after Christmas. They also had a financial expert who testified that TradeCorp USA and the Petersons were both reasonably financially healthy, so that wasn't a motive. But the other thing is, okay, so the defense offered explanations for the circumstances of Peterson's behavior in April. His use of his mother's name to purchase a car was at her suggestion to avoid having it impounded. He had large amounts of cash because she gave it to him to reimburse him for money erroneously withdrawn from his account rather than hers. And finally, he had his brother's driver's license because of the club where he was going to golf that day gave discounts for local residents such as his brother's. But still no explanation of the foreign money, why'd you dye your hair, et cetera. But he did have some reasonable reasons for those things. Now, if it wasn't true and his mother confirmed it, I think she's a poop bird as well. If he's lying and they were able to confirm through her that that was not the case, then good for her. But that's your boy. I told Ken, you better not ever.
Oh, me too.
Get, because I will let cops know.
Yep.
She too. That whole family thinks he's innocent.
They do.
I thought the sister-in-law wasn't sure.
Yeah.
At one point, I think it's been so long.
Yeah.
You but
didn't bring
the
mother, glasses, did you?
I did.
It's just amazing to me how family members, they just think someone's guilty. You can have DNA. You can have so much, and they still.
Still believe they're innocent.
Still believe.
Which along those lines, it, you know, if you don't hold your children accountable, then it can spawn that sort of behavior.
It can. You know, I remember when I was married, Mike thought I was too easy on Kent. And I'm like, you know, I could see that. I could see. And I had to be really careful and really cautious to make sure I wasn't letting him off, you know, because he was our only child. He was a very compliant, good kid. But I did. I had to kind of stretch myself, you know, where I'm going to have a little bit more of a discipline process that I hate to do, but for his sake, I'm going to do it. Nothing, you know, crazy. Like if I say I wanted to ground him for a day, it's like, no, you need to ground him for probably a week. That's probably what he deserves mm-hmm. for the crime. But then there'd be other times where you could tell his heart was repentant. And so I'd let him off early because I knew he felt bad mm-hmm. for what he did, not that he was being punished. So it is. It's like if you have that situation where that's the baby, I think he did have charisma.
Yes.
And you love him, you like him. I could see parents doing that, but I still think it's crappy. Yeah, it's like Brian Laundry.
Yep.
So I think his parents
helped him though. Yeah.
I think I did find the reporter's name, but we'll
check it out.
Yeah. Ted Rollins is, I believe, the reporter, but I was just glancing very quickly.
Okay. Well, then the next thing that the defense is upset about is the dog.
Mm-hmm.
So the dog scent. This, I had no idea that dogs were like this. So they had extensive testimony from and cross-examination of various dog handlers concerning their training, as well as their dog's training and past performance. The court excluded all dog scent trailing evidence as lacking in sufficient foundation and corroboration, except for evidence of scent trailing at the Berkeley Marina. So the evidence there differed because there was corroborating evidence that Lacey had been present in the area, meaning, namely, that her remains washed ashore on the edge of the bay, which was very near the marina. The dog handler, Eloise Anderson, a member of the Contra Costa County Sheriff's Department, which, by the way, the cop that helped find the Golden State Killer, I don't remember what his name is. He is so good looking.
One moment.
So good looking. And not he really worked for Contra Costa.
Golden
State Killer. I'm going to see too. Let me see.
So good looking. But her dog is Trimble, okay? And she reported to the marina with Trimble on December 28th, 4 days after her disappearance. Mm-hmm. Oh, Paul Holes. Is. Shout out to Paul Holes. Good looking man.
Very good looking.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, why else do I know this guy?
He's a podcaster, too.
That's, yes. Mm-hmm. I used to listen to him.
He's been on some crime shows, too.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, he's been on crime shows. I recognize
him. Agreed, sister. Good call.
Heart.
Okay, sorry. Bunny Trail.
Okay. So she shows up at the marina. Anderson was provided a glasses case containing a pair of Lacey's sunglasses, and then she asked to work with her dog to determine if Lacey's scent could be detected. The marina harbor had two separate access points where someone might enter, so Anderson had Trimble check each entry point. So she was wearing rubber gloves to conceal her own scent.
The evidence. This is a three-part.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, we're going to finish because this is ridiculous. Okay, yeah. Okay, so she does, okay, she gets her gloves on so that she doesn't pass her scent. She opens the glasses case, the sunglasses, presents it to Trimble, and then gave the trailing command. In the first location, there was a no scent trail signal. In the second, he lined out, meaning pulling her harness line taut with level head and taking Anderson from an area near the parking lot down to one of the piers to a pylon on the pier where a boat could have been tied, and then gave Anderson the end of trail signal. So the dispute was over that this is a new science, a new thing. What I found out, and I did not know, because what shocked me is that the dog found the scent of Lacey. But Lacey wasn't walking. Like, her scent was still on the pier, and she was only in the boat. And they can do that. They can actually trail a person in the back of a vehicle, which is incredible.
That is incredible. That's amazing.
Didn't think about that.
So
amazing.
They had to make sure that the dog was adequately trained, because mm-hmm. there have been false things before. They also had to make sure that the jury understood the science, all of that, and they did. They proved that the jury knew what was going on. She had 2 decades of training them. But yeah, here it is. A non-contact trail is one left by a person not in contact with the ground, as in a bicycle or in a vehicle. For example, in a November 1999 exercise, Trimble successfully trailed a person who had left a trail largely on asphalt, which retains scent more poorly than vegetation. The trail was 5 days old, and there had been intervening rainstorms. In a December 2001 exercise, Trimble successfully followed a four-day-old non-contact trail left by a bicyclist riding the 30 miles from Walnut Creek to Dublin. Jeez. Given the length of the trail, it was not physically possible for him to cover the entire distance. So at various points, she was driven from one section to a later section, but she was able to relocate, and follow the bicyclist scent every time.
Wow.
That's the dog. And let's see what else we've got here. So the humidity enhances the ability of the dog to smell. I didn't know that, but it makes sense. Now, they're saying it shouldn't be included, you know, that blah, 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 that it's not real science. I mean, they have all the usual. Now, I want to see.
This could have been a three-parter.
I know. But there was just a lot of technical stuff, and it was kind of confusing. But I do have a few things here. So the tidal currents in the area were weak, and they would have likely have canceled out, meaning that Dr. Chang treated wind-driven drift as a principal force that would have moved Connor's body to the shore. And he accepted as a starting assumption the hypothesis that Lacey and Connor had been weighted down and then broken free, and treated Connor as a floating body thereafter. He performed calculations using an equation they have for the U.S. Army of Engineers, the wind speeds, the water movement, etc. And that's how he came up with where Connor was located. But they said that the accuracy was on initial assumptions, not certainty. So that's why they were arguing about that. Like, they said it was unknown when his body had actually washed ashore. So how could they really pinpoint where they started? Like, if you don't have that for sure date, then how did they know that it would have been there, right?
So maybe the condition of the body?
Possibly. I mean, I think they would definitely take that into consideration. But it's like, you know, how long was he in her body before he was extracted? How, yeah. You know, like all of those things, they're just saying it's a little bit sketchy. And that's why that's a problem. They also the defense try to do some videotape evidence of a boat and trying to get her body out, and then it wouldn't have worked and all that. Well, the judge said no, because the boat wasn't the same. There were several things. There was a whole bunch of objections because the boat was mounted on wood, so the center of gravity would have been different. And it raised it up. The boat had a different motor than Peterson's boat. The person performing the experiment was wearing a weight belt that impeded his movements. Nothing established prevailing tides, currents, or waves, or how closely they approximated the conditions on the 24th. Nothing established the location of the experiment. The boat's gas tank and batteries were located in different positions than the Peterson's boat. The boat had plywood decking adding, which could affect its stability. The dummy got wet, which would have added weight. The boat was already starting to take on water because the employee even tried to dump the dummy, and the employee performed the experiment while standing in the boat's gunwales, which suggested he was intentionally trying to sink the boat.
Did he not have a good lawyer?
I don't think so. So they're basically trying to fabricate evidence, is what they're trying to do. And so, you know, there were several things that they were trying to say that they should have let this in, or they shouldn't have let this in, and blah, 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 blah. The reason that basically that part of the argument was struck down is they said the court gave the defense an opportunity to redo the experiment with the proper boat, to make sure that the conditions were as close as possible, and they didn't. So they could have. So you can't appeal on that. You were given the opportunity to do it, and you didn't. Yeah.
I'd get new lawyers.
Well, and, I thought he did.
And basically the idea was they were trying to prove that it was impossible to get her body out of there without capsizing the boat.
Yeah.
And the prosecution proved you actually can do it. Well, they change everything up to try to make it seem like you can't. And then when they have the opportunity to redo the experiment, they don't. So what is that saying?
They know
it was possible, right? And then, of course, we have, you know, number five, who she was like, you know, this dude's guilty and I'm going to get him because he's an abuser and I was abused.
Yeah.
Now, I have some notes, not in here, but from the prosecutor's podcast that I want to go over from memory. The first thing is that Scott Peterson, remember the mop? And the mop bucket that was found?
Yeah.
So the cops ask him about that. They're like, what's this about? Because they're suspecting cleanup. And he said, well, Lacey she mopped that morning. Well, here's the problem with that. Everybody testifies and lets the cops know that Lacey was feeling really sluggish and heavy and quite miserable at this point in her pregnancy. She had stopped taking Mackenzie for walks. She had a house cleaner that had come the day before and already mopped.
Okay.
That was a big deal. And they're like, why would she then mop the next day? And so it's like, well, they're going to have company. No, they're going to dinner somewhere else on the 24th.
Had it rained there?
I don't know, but from what everybody's, you know, saying, there was no reason for her to mop and that she probably wouldn't have anyway because the house was already clean the day before. But if it had rained, if I'm getting inside my head, I would either just do the one area where the footprints are.
Right.
Because I don't think I could even bend down to, you know, at that point in my pregnancy, I don't think I would have even gotten down to try to wipe them up with a towel. Mm. I would have probably gotten the mop as well.
So here's the thing. Mop bucket, those get heavy when you fill them up.
They do. So. Well, it was, if I'm not mistaken, people can look this up, but I think it was one of those that rolled. And then you put the mop in there and did the handle.
But you still got to fill it up.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. I have to lift mine and fill it up here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she was not walking the dog anymore. Because she was too heavy, and she had really bad swollen feet, and she was not doing the chores. The fact that she went grocery shopping is interesting, and I think maybe is a small amount. I don't know, or it's one of those things you just have to do. So she wasn't incapacitated being pregnant, but she was definitely slowing down some of the activities that she enjoyed until the baby got there.
The mop bucket is interesting, and the house cleaner before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I got to do footprints, but that mop bucket.
Mm-mm. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I didn't think about that. If I was in her stage of pregnancy, I would probably just get the mop, go to the sink.
Uh-huh, wring it out.
And then go. I wouldn't be doing the bucket either.
Unless you're super-duper OCD.
She did like a clean home. But that was very suspicious. His blood being on the bedspread and then in his pickup there as well. I'm wondering if maybe she scratched him. I believe, so this is my conclusion that I want to read this letter to finish this up. But my conclusion is that they got in a fight on December 23rd or he decided to kill her that night. I am a little hesitant that he did because he told Amber he was going to be unavailable until after January.
But at the same time, he also said this was going to be my first holiday without her.
Yeah. So he either, they got in a fight or he had decided that night to do it. Then, and the reason I wonder if they got in a fight is, and I could not find this again, but I think the prosecutors are the one that brought it out. She knew of one affair before.
Oh.
And that if she found out he had done it to her again, she was going to divorce him.
And he had that financial situation.
And I wonder if she found messages between him and Amber. I don't know. There's no evidence to support it. But that was a threat for him, that if she found out he was having another affair, that was it. So you got the financial issues, you've got the jewelry he's trying to sell, etc. So
he needed her around.
Yep.
Yeah. And whether he was in love with Amber, I couldn't say. I don't think he knows what that is, but I think he was definitely enjoying that life. He wanted to free himself of the burden of a new baby. I also remember, but this was like a skewed documentary against him, so I don't know if it was true. From what I understand, he did not want her pregnant. He did not want a baby. He liked their life as it was, but I could not find any evidence of that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's one of those media things where they say that, but it's not true. So I think he killed her the 23rd. I don't think it was the 24th because she was wearing the clothing that her sister remembered her in. So I think it was probably that evening. Mm-hmm. He did have some plan, whether it was that night or not, I don't know. And so he's got the boat. He then puts her body under the umbrellas. Now, the umbrellas are interesting because if my memory serves me correct, he was saying he was going to take the umbrellas to the warehouse, and yet they were still in his pickup after he had been to the warehouse.
Yep. I wonder if they tested the umbrellas.
I don't know.
Ooh, we need to find that out because that would be absolutely 100% if her DNA was on it.
I think he actually put her in the boat. So, yeah, boat, she probably would have been in the pickup. But when he gets her there, he gets her in the boat. He forgets to take the umbrellas out. So hopefully they did test them. And then he puts the cover over the boat and drives to the marina. I think he strangled her. I think he strangled her, and then he had to figure out his plans on how to get rid of the body, which he had pretty much already decided how he's going to do that when he bought the boat on the 8th.
Because the umbrellas never made sense to me, because I remember that it kept getting mentioned in that documentary. I was like, what's the big deal about the umbrellas? But your point, I wonder if they test them.
Yeah.
That would have been 100%. Mm-hmm.
If her DNA was on there, absolutely. Yeah. So I think he's guilty. I don't think there was, a satanic cult kidnapping women off the street. I don't think that she was robbed. I don't think that she took the dog for a walk. I don't think any of that. I think she was dead by the time he left the house in the morning.
All right. So with the blouse and the trips, the very short trips to the marina, kind of seal it for me.
Yeah. So that sealed it for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Mom?
Oh, yeah. Ours.
So especially that evening, like they spent the whole day together, had plans to go to dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a sad deal.
It's awful.
And the fact that he could do that, not just to his wife, but his own baby, is unbelievable. Now, Congressman William E. Dannemeyer wrote September 20th, 2006, to Attorney General Bill Lockyer, who was the Attorney General at the time. Dear Attorney General Lockyer, recently a friend of mine handed me a book written by Attorney Matt Dalton entitled Presumed Guilty. Mr. Dalton was at one time a member of the defense team which defended Scott Peterson, who was charged with and convicted of first-degree murder for the death of his wife, Lacey, and second-degree murder for the death of their unborn son, Connor. Mr. Dalton wrote the book because of concerns he expressed on page 3. What had happened to the information I had uncovered about the van that was sitting across from Lacey's house the morning of the 24th and was later seen speeding away from the area where she was last seen walking. The pregnant women woman who was being terrorized in the neighborhood, the numerous other pregnant women who disappeared in the area, the crime spree in Lacey's neighborhood that started hours before she disappeared, the screaming coming from the park bathroom where Lacey was seen walking the morning of December 24th. Why was there no testimony from the witnesses the morning of December 24th I'd interviewed who had seen Lacey with her dog that day? What about the felons who were breaking into the house across the street? You are the chief law enforcement area in the state of California, or one of the district attorneys or sheriffs of one of 58 counties in the state of California, or the chief of police in one of the 478 incorporated cities in the state of California, and each of you is charged with the responsibility to take whatever action is necessary to protect and defend the people of this state from the criminal element wherever it is found, blah, 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 blah. So then he says, my knowledge of the tragic death of Lacey and Connor Peterson has been gleaned primarily from the book written by Mr. Dalton. I believe a grave injustice has been done. An innocent man is in prison and condemned to die for a crime he did not commit. Don't blame the trial jury, which convicted Scott Peterson. Trial jurors can only reach a verdict on the evidence presented in the courtroom instructions by the trial judge. These factors contributed to the jury verdict. Sensational journalistic accounts, he said. From the outset, the Modesto police determined he was the one that killed her and their unborn child. Relevant exculpatory evidence developed by Mr. Dalton was not investigated and presented to the jury, which is crap. And he said, it clearly establishes that members of a satanic cult were very active in the Modesto area and responsible for the death of Lacey. So now we have satanic panic.
They were active.
Who'd you say wrote that?
A senator. He goes on and on and on. And you can find it. Just Google letter of Congressman William E. Dannemeyer about Scott Peterson, and you'll find the letter. Dannemeyer. He said that leads were not pursued because of a lack of funds. A gold watch we believe to have belonged to Lacey had been pawned within a week of her disappearance. That's not true. The list goes on and on. Picture the Peterson neighborhood around the time of Lacey's disappearance. Six possible felonies were all occurring between the evening of the 23rd and the 24th. We have the burglary at the Medina house. A brown van was described in a possible attempted abduction the night of the 23rd, a daytime burglary the morning of the 24th, possible satanic rape and abduction days before Lacey disappeared. The van at the Woodward Reservoir was from the airport district of Modesto. A woman 8 months pregnant was terrorized by two men in a car 5 blocks from where Lacey had last been seen. She got the license plate number. Then Gallegos cross-examined the police about their knowledge of these witnesses and what they reported, but the court correctly instructed the jury they could not consider this for the truth of what the witnesses said because it was hearsay. That meant that in their deliberations, the jury was precluded from considering the 6 witnesses claimed to have seen Lacey walking her dog. Even if one witness was had convinced the jury of this fact, he would have been exonerated. In his final argument, the prosecutor argued that the failure to produce the witnesses was not the responsibility of the prosecution, but of the defense. I agree. If you've got these witnesses that said they saw her, it is the defense's responsibility to bring them forward. So what does that tell me? They didn't have them. Yeah. There's no way they could prove that they saw Lacey. He mentioned satanic holy days and the satanic calendar, that the dismemberment is a fashion of the hallmark of satanic cult killings. He goes on and on and on and basically demanded that they let this guy free and they do whatever. So I wanted to briefly go over that letter because it shows how divided people are on this case. And even some listening to this episode, even with all of the evidence, they're still going to be convinced that he did not do it.
I'd like to hear their opinions and why.
I would too.
They write in.
Yeah, I would too, because it's something that needs to be discussed. But the fact that a congressman, now here's the thing, reads one book.
Right.
Get the trial documents, get the court documents, get the evidence that the police have, go through it, you know, figure out what happened. Don't read a book from some dude that was on the side of the criminal, right? And then come to this conclusion. How do you know these things weren't investigated? He's just sharing his opinion that the cops didn't do their job. Everybody says that. So it was fascinating to me that he went to that extreme.
That's crazy.
So that's the levels of extreme in this case.
Yeah. Hopefully he's still not in office.
I think he's dead of old age.
By a book. Straighten up. By a book. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to be careful what you read, guys. It's good to read both sides, but there have been, I cannot tell you how many true crime shows I've watched where there was so much evidence that seemed to point to a person, but there wasn't a body of it that was large enough to get him to court. So then fast forward, DNA finds out they didn't do it.
Yeah.
And so that's why you have to have that body. And that's why you have to be very thorough. And if there's not enough evidence to go after them, then you can't go after them. And I think the ones that get too gung-ho and they end up putting innocent people behind bars probably had less evidence than they've even had for Scott Peterson, but they have less evidence and they end up behind bars because they make it fit.
Yep.
So you got to make sure you dig through this stuff yourself before you have opinions.
And don't rely on a book.
Exactly.
Hence the Hubbard book.
What?
Yeah, I read that in the 70s.
The Hubbard book?
Scientology.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
It was just a
book.
Let's not
go there. Okay. I get really heated up about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just saying not all books are true.
Agreed.
Exactly. Okay. All right. So it seems like so far we have all reached the same conclusions once we examine the case.
You know it. But you didn't
want to
forget it.
I was so excited. I meant that to be inside.
Be smart.
Be rude.
And don't be an idiot.
And don't be a victim.
Oh, uh-huh. Victim.
Idiot.
Wow. I'm totally kidding.
Outline of a Murder is a Mr. Joseph production. What do you think, Joseph?